You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. All over the World Wide Web on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive the shows. You can pick by date, which each and every Monday between 1 and 2 p.m., Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here is live on the air. And then afterward, we always have it on our social media, which is under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and also on our website with pictures under SitaMediaInc.com.
That's
great,
right.
Stuff.
That's right.
And after 15 years, we've got lots of guests. On our website, you can actually search by topic or by candidate name or by book or any
my
of those
name.
Things. Or CETA.
Yeah.
That's right. S-E-E-T-A.
So on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill and myself, we sit here. Ellen is my co-host. She's been on the show for 14 years. I can't believe it. Almost 15 years. We couldn't have Viewpoint with CETA and Friends without Ellen, who does all the action behind the scenes to keep the show running. Danny Whiting runs our board, and Allie, who's our guest forever, comes in. She's not here today.
Yeah, not here today.
We miss her.
That's okay. Yeah.
We sit here and we talk to people, good human beings, sometimes bad. We don't know. They're just humans. Human
That's
beings.
Right. We're all humans.
Human beings who have an advocacy of some sort. Some people want to talk about financial literacy. Some folks want to talk about the banking system. Some folks want to talk about politicians running for office, a candidate for office. We have lawyers, doctors, teachers, people who write a book, people who want to write a book. It depends on what folks want to do. They book a segment, they come on our show, and we chat. And we have good conversations in a fun, interesting, and very informative, I would say, Ellen. We give out very, very valuable information on our show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whether we even talk about taxes.
Yeah.
And what it means when you pay your taxes and what you're paying for and what you're getting back for your dollar in these great United States.
That's right.
We've had folks that came on our show to advocate for books, against book banning, for book banning, and teachers. And today's no different on our show. We're supposed to have our friend Sanjay Udashi, who's supposed to be calling in. He might be busy. He's an MD. He probably seen patients. I'm not sure. And our second segment was supposed to be with Mr. Keith Schachter. And Keith is a candidate for Brevard County School Board District 4.
That's right. And this segment is going to be a paid political advertisement paid for and approved by the Keith Schachter campaign for Brevard County School Board District 4.
That's right. And so, Keith, without further ado, we're going to have you start chatting because our friend Sandra hasn't called in yet. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to put your hat in the ring.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you guys having me on the show. Deciding to run for school board was a very difficult decision for me. I actually entered the school board race fairly late in the game in qualifying. And the reason why I decided to enter the race was multifaceted, really. I've always thought that our schools needed change. And I worked in the schools for 17 years to conclude that, so I have a lot of direct experience with that. But ultimately, what really influenced my interest in wanting to run was seeing the leadership in our schools. I felt like we needed a change in direction There's been too many things going on in our schools. The divisive politics have infiltrated our school system to the point where school board meetings have gotten ugly. We have school board members fighting with one another. We have public commenters attacking school board members. And there's just not a whole lot of decorum in our schools right now. And I just feel like politics and schools, they shouldn't mix. It should not be about that. There's a reason why this race is a nonpartisan race. And I got disgusted about seeing too many politics. And so I said, you know what? I can't take it anymore. I got to do something.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm running.
And the school board races, Keith, should not be partisan. It should be nonpartisan because once elected, a school board member is serving the community for all the children. Every student deserves a quality public education, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, it's not should be. It is not a partisan race. And that's what's so frustrating is that despite the fact that the public school, the school board races are classified as nonpartisan, it still is about partisan. And so you're right. Sound educational policy influences positive systemic, you know, positive change across the entire political spectrum. There's not a conservative, moderate, or liberal that can make an argument to me that can go against, you know, what I stand for as far as education is concerned. I mean, what is the job of our schools? Our schools are supposed to be preparing our students to be successful in careers and jobs that are either locally or beyond this area. And that has nothing to do with where you are on the political spectrum. So I stand for education on a much larger perspective.
And I love the fact that you, on your website, as well as, you know, just getting prepared for myself being a voter in Brevard County, just getting prepared myself, I was looking at the Brevard Schools YouTube channel and specifically and seeing the arguments and the decorum that you're talking about bringing the decorum back. It also sparked me to start watching a little bit more of the city, you know, the city official types of websites as well, because under the Sunshine Law, we can see all of these things. So your website is so concise in saying, you know, about the behavior and the things that we need to do better for our students in our Brevard County schools. And seeing it live on the YouTube channel was really eye-opening for me. So thank you for that. And thank you for hopefully all of the folks out there that are listening that are taking the time now to do their research for this August 20 primary that's
right.
coming
a lot,
up.
And you know what? A lot of people don't know that they're supposed to vote by August 20th.
That's right.
So that's what our show, we're going to educate people that if you had your vote by mail or early voting or you plan to go in on the 20th, make that plan now. Take your time off. Get somebody to watch your kid, whatever it is. You've got to do it. It's important. You can't complain about what's happening with Brevard Public Schools if you don't get involved and vote.
That's right.
That's the truth, right? So, Keith, let's talk a little bit about what is your view on schools of choice?
Well, my view is, you know, I don't have, you know, my opinion on schools of choice is they're necessary in this climate that we're in right now. One could argue that it hurts public schools, which it does and can. Yet when you look at what the schools have been doing and the product that we've been producing in our public schools, it's in my opinion that we have to offer alternatives because parents should have the right to choose what is going to be the best education for their children. And so although I don't like the fact that our schools of choice have become, have hurt our schools, because anytime a parent does choose a school of choice, ultimately what's happening is the money that would follow that kid to go to the public school is sent elsewhere. Until our public schools start to do better at being competitive, then there has to be competition, right? So I'm not necessarily opposed to the competition, but I am opposed to the equity and fairness of how these schools of choice are operating. It's not fair. For example, you know, there are parents that might make a decision to send their kid to a school of choice, whether that be a charter school or even a private school, or, you know, use a voucher program. that's all good and dandy, but I can't tell you, I mean, in working in the schools for as long as I did, what always frustrated me is finding those kids that ended up coming back into the school like in January or February, but they didn't come with money.
Yeah.
You know, and so I feel like there needs to be some reform, I think, in how these school voucher programs or schools of choice operate, so that when parents do decide to make that decision, and when schools of choice do take on the kids, they ought to either keep the kid for the full year or send them back with a check.
Right. I mean, there should be more accountability and transparency, I believe.
Absolutely.
Right? I've always said that. And, you know, there are students with all different kind of needs in public school. Students that come to school, some don't speak English. It's their second language. Low-income students, diverse background. How do you plan to address the needs of all the students?
Well, I mean, that's the, that's a question for everybody to answer. You know,
yes.
What I mean, and you do the best you can with what you have. I think part of that is why I feel so strongly that so much systemic reform is needed, because our school system is really set up to hurt those children that come from underprivileged backgrounds or who come from backgrounds of varying exceptionalities, because a lot of the times, or kids that speak English as a second language, because our school system is so predicated on focusing on data and testing and standardized test results that, although we're supposed to be providing services and providing support to these kids, the reality is these kids are not getting what they need. Then they start getting tested, and when they don't perform well on the test, that puts more pressure on them and their family and so on and so forth. And so, to answer your question, I think that we need to be a lot more diverse in our curricular offerings to kids. You know, it shouldn't just be about how well did you do on a test, because...
Like no one size fit all.
No, right. No, we need to meet our learners where they're at, and we need to value the diverse learning styles that all people have. That's what's always frustrating to me is... You know, the first theory we learn as public educators is Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. And what he said was, you know, we all have multiple intelligences that stem from a wide array of intelligences. For example, musical intelligence. You know, I mean, how can you explain the kid who could pick up a saxophone and never have really been taught that and can play it in so much shorter of a time than someone like myself who would struggle mightily at that? That's a gift. That's a talent. We don't value that gift or talent in the schools. We tell the kid that's musically gifted that you could only get music if you do well on this math and reading test. And I feel like that's selfish, because we're not providing a wide array of opportunities for kids to develop their talents. And Howard Gardner said it himself. He said the only way you succeed, the people that succeed the most are the people that are developing or working on what they're talented at, that it's not good to work on things that you're not good at. And so our system is predicated on that. It's like, okay, Johnny, you failed these reading tests for the last 3 years. So what we're going to do to help you out is we're going to give you more of what you failed at and take away
what you're good at.
Right.
Yeah.
And how is that going to make that kid an inspired reader? Who knows that if we give the kid what he actually loves to do, or she loves to do, how do we know that that won't create a trend that will actually influence positive test results? So, you know, I feel like our school system is set in the dark ages. It's all about status quo. We keep on doing the same thing and expecting
different
results. It's
like a robot,
results.
You know?
It's the whole thing is
backwards. And to Keith's point, it's just like with music. Yeah, you know, you could teach math by teaching the circle of fifths in music. So and somebody that knows music and knows the language of music, and it's inherent that of that language of music, teaching it like that, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. It's like that light bulb goes off so much quicker, but we don't take the time to figure out how the light bulb goes off for each
and
for each person. We do for the middle,
and that's
a
crime
for the general.
It's a crime. It shouldn't happen. We don't meet the kids where they're at. We don't find the time and opportunity to find out where their talents lie. And it's really difficult to actually teach the way I'm talking about, you know, I mean, to be able to find different skill sets and talents in kids and be able to do so. So we all just gravitate towards the middle. But that's a great point. You know, the kid who is musically gifted, if you teach them something about math concepts, but from a music spin, you are now getting providing a lot more value to the math than they would have seen had it been just about, hey, you need to answer this question because it's important and it's going to be on the standardized test. That kid's like, forget that. I'd much rather be playing my instrument,
right.
You know? So yeah. Great point. I'm glad you brought that
up.
Well,
and the other part, like even with drama, you know, English lit, it's about a lot of memorization. And I've seen my friends that were really good with drama, like they could do a play. They could do an entire 2-hour play and remember every line. But you get them in English lit and they can't remember, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. And so, again, you twist it in such a way. And it's only because I have so many nieces and nephews that, you know, I'm sick of this, them coming to me going, you know, we got to show our work. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, every child
like,
is different.
Again, like, what school are you in again? So I know how to show the work for that school, you know,
so
for that teacher.
For our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Keith Schachter, and he is a candidate for School Board District 4 here in Brevard County, Florida. So, you know, oftentimes I speak with people on the show, and we hear a lot of people talk about, does school board candidates favor public funding for private and religious schools? And I know when I ran for office way back in the day, that was something that we had talked about. And, of course, things have changed fast forward a few years now. It used to be if you wanted your child to go to a religious school, you worked that second job and you send your kid to that school. But now we're seeing in the forms of vouchers and tax credits that kids are able to go to private schools or charter schools. How do you feel about that?
I don't like it. I don't like it, but it is what's happening. And
right.
So we have to work within the boundaries to do so.
Because there should be a separation of church and state, right?
Well, theoretically, but that's changing. You know, and whether you agree or disagree with it, it's the reality of our current state politics. And so we have to follow the trends. And I think if you don't like it, and I just said I don't, then we have to do a better job of making our schools better.
Yeah.
Okay. And so maybe that parent will choose not to exercise their right for a voucher if they feel confident in the schools that their kid is zoned to go to. But I feel like the public confidence in our public school system has been eroded, and it's been eroded due to the negative politics that have really poisoned our schools at the local level. And until we fix that, we're not going to be able to stop this natural changes towards these
programs.
Yeah, because,
people complain about their tax dollars going for certain things, you know, the war, and they talk about Medicaid expansion. Some folks don't want Medicaid expanded. Some people don't want to pay for a woman's health care. But yet still, the taxes that we pay is going for religious education. And like you said, it's just shoved down our throats. Some people feel that way. But if you want your kid to go to a school where that's the kind of education they want, you should pay for that. Not the taxpayer, but it is what it is, right?
It's the direction. It's the direction that our state is going in, and I've seen it happen for a long time. And now the right pieces are in place to execute that. And so, you know, we have it from the state on down, from our governor down.
Yeah,
down
when
the road.
That happens, it takes away from the public school. And we will see. Do you feel like that will contribute to more schools, public schools, community schools being closed?
I think our school system is in dire straits. And, I'm one of the few candidates that's willing to admit that. Like, you know, I see the writing on the wall. Our public school system is in huge trouble. And people don't want to open their eyes to it. I'm telling you, you know, we've seen declining student enrollment or even flatline student enrollment, most of the public doesn't understand that the way in which schools are funded from the state is based on enrollment. I mean, today is the first day of school, and at every school in Brevard County right now, at the end of the, you know, in the morning time, everyone, what they're doing is they're counting kids, and they report the numbers, the physical warm bodies in the classroom to the district. The district reports those numbers to the state, and then the state releases the budget based on enrollment.
Yeah, teachers' salaries is also included in that administration.
Absolutely.
Everything is included. You know, I don't think the public pays enough attention to what's happening with our school system unless it gets contentious, like when there's something going on with the masks.
The public has been oblivious to public education for the longest of time. I mean, we're all, I just wrote something about this on my website, the public has been duped and fooled to think that our schools are so good. In fact, it's interesting that COVID was the one thing that really exposed our schools, because, you know, once we had to shut them down, people started to realize, like, you know, that the schools weren't able to pivot quickly to be able to facilitate online learning, when here we were in 2020 and the internet's been around forever and every college in the country offers online learning. And here Brevard Public Schools fell flat on their face when they had to pivot to that. The public thinks that our schools are good based on this ridiculous state scoring system that we have, where the Florida state grade schools, you get an A, B, C, D, or F based on how well kids do on test scores. And, you know, so I can't tell you how many times I've talked to parents and they're like, oh, my kid goes to an A school. And they think that's a good thing. And I'm here to tell you that it's not. It's not a good thing. So what if your kid goes to an A school? All that means is that most of the kids in the school were able to pass a test. But are they qualified to go on to the next level? Talk to most employers. Talk to most people in the community. Ask them, are the people that we are producing out of our schools ready to work in
employable.
That?
Employable.
Are they employable?
Yeah,
And they're all going to tell you, most of them are going to say, there is a disconnect. And so here we are thinking that our schools are so great because our school's an A school, when in reality our kids are not accumulating important life skills that are commensurate with today's world of work. It is 2024, and our school system is stuck like it's in the 1970s.
So that brings me to my next question. There are so many literacy challenges, and we see it. A lot of people can't read. And how, when once elected to the school board, how do you propose to help in this issue? Because there's so many people that they don't understand that a lot of kids by third grade, they can't read. A lot of parents won't take their kids to the library. What has happened that so many kids are graduating from high school and can't read and understand what they're reading?
Well, you know, that's a very complex answer. I mean, you know, I think that it was a lot easier to, you know, I think that technology has kind of hurt that a little bit, right? You know, I mean, we have so much technology out there that supports kids. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, it was a big deal to have to define words and do spelling tests. And now that's become sort of oblivious technology. Like, you know, like, why are you asking me to spell something when I can just ask Siri how something is spelled?
We used to go home with a sheet.
Or what's defined.
With 20 words. I remember
right.
My kids had to learn the words. And we practiced, you know, but they don't do that anymore.
No. So,
they don't write in cursive anymore.
Right.
I know.
And you know what? And why do they need to?
Right.
You know, think about it. Like, kids need to learn how to in cursive. Well, why is that? Because you were taught how to in cursive.
Yeah.
Because spelling was important to you. And the reality is you don't need to know how to do cursive. You know, we need to be more forward thinking.
We need
in our
financial literacy pieces.
Absolutely.
So
we need to teach kids about money.
How many kids graduate and can't do math, basic math?
Well, and I think that part of that problem is what we were talking about earlier. You asked about literacy. I mean, obviously that's an extremely, it's the most important thing is we need to produce kids that know how to read. But if we keep on trying to teach kids how to read based on how we've been doing it, and you keep seeing the scores struggle, Or maybe they're not, because as you could see, we have a, you know, our school system now has a, is an A-rated system. That means that there were kids that were, that got the good scores, but, you know.
Or that paid for the answers to the tests.
Or had the resources to be able to, right, to do so. I mean, right, the whole, you know, I mean, certain, that's why you see more A-rated schools in affluent areas, and the schools that aren't as affluent have lower test scores. And that's just because the kids didn't start off. I mean, you know, education starts in the womb, really. I mean, I was singing songs to my daughter when my wife was pregnant. You know, we were stimulating her, you know, when she was out of, when she was born, she was, you know, she had two very educated parents, and we valued education in the home. And, you know, 0 to 5 or 4, I mean, how critical are those years? And unfortunately, what happens is these kids that come from underprivileged backgrounds, they start late. If you're not taught the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s from 0 to 4, by the time you're 5, you're in trouble. And then the teachers have a hard time catching these kids up. And then all of a sudden, third grade comes around and they start testing these kids and they don't succeed. And so then their school gets hit up with, you know, bad test scores.
Yeah,
and
we had somebody that called in on our show recently and talked with us about speaking to the child in the womb. We actually had somebody a few weeks ago that called and said that learning actually begins at that time. Was really cool.
Because they're a sponge at that time, right, too. But I wanted to bring out one thing to make sure that the listeners all know. You're a business owner,
yes,
as well.
Right.
And, you know, so one of the things on your website, one of the questions that's on your website is really like something that I want to make sure that people know. The question is what uniquely qualifies you for the position of the board member? What do you believe the expectations are of an elected school board official? And I just thought the piece on this, understanding both sides of it, not just being an educator, and I want you to speak out about that, but as a business owner too, you've seen the money that you've raised fiscally for the Brevard County and Seminole County,
sure,
school systems as well. So what's your take on that? What makes you unique, and what do our listeners really, that's what it boils down to, is the uniqueness of how great your experience is.
Thank you. What makes me unique is, you know, I mean, definitely having both those different experiences makes me, you know, by nature, just on paper, more qualified than all the candidates. I mean, you know, the incumbent was a teacher, and then he got into insurance, and he's not really a full-time into that. He's just, you know, he's on the board. You know, we have another candidate who has a military background, very distinguished woman, lots of credentials. And then we have a young man who's a student. I spent 17 years in our school system, not just in the classroom, 10 in the classroom and 7 outside the classroom. I got my master's degree in ed leadership. I learned about the budget and how it works. I worked as a school administrator. I also managed a multi-million dollar federal grant where I had to make sure that we were doing the right things and being fiscally responsible per the federal guidelines.
So do you feel there's a deficiency in the $1 million budget for the Brevard schools?
Well, it's $1
billion
plus.
$1 billion,
you know, I mean,
plus.
I think that there are all kinds of problems with the budget. I think that we need to do a better job of spending. I think we spend our money on a lot of things that shouldn't be spent on. So without question, there's a problem. But for me to go, I'd have to really dive into it on a line-by-line item. But I could tell you that there's a lot of wasteful spending. Like, for example, every 5 years we do a textbook adoption. The other day I walked into a high school, I won't mention which one, and there were a lot of shiny new civics books. I mean, you should have seen the size of these things. You know, they had to be at least be $100 a pop. People don't realize this, but that's part of the school budget. That's the operating budget. Every 5 years we do a textbook adoption. Now, obviously, in recent time, we've changed some of our standards of what we're teaching. So, of course, we got to update our textbooks. But if you think about the big picture here, how much has our history really changed? How much has Algebra 1 changed to where we need to keep buying new books
it
every 5 years?
It sounds like
there's
a lot of money given
for who's
contracts,
running?
Right?
Contracts. Oh, yeah.
Contracts
textbook.
To buy the books, contracts for the food, contracts for the janitors, contracts for the maintenance men. I don't think anybody's actually looking out for the students and how to get more students enrolled. But, you know, a lot of people are talking about the mental health of students, gun violence. And after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, there was a lot of talk about security in the schools, police officer in the schools, What is your take on that?
Well, I think that our school system has been, and for the longest time, we're reactive and not proactive. So when there's a school shooting, and that's a tragic event, we react. We react by spending a fortune on safety measures, bulletproof glass, SROs, now the Guardian program, ring in to get through the front door. So we're fortifying our schools.
So it's more money.
So again, we're spending a lot of money on things because something tragic happens. But yet, once you walk inside the walls, our kids, do they feel safe? And I would argue no, because we're not putting enough money into critical human resources. You know, if a kid is struggling and they need to see their guidance counselor or a social worker, we have a hard time finding these people to work.
A lot of anxiety in our schools. That brings us to the next question about the shortage of the teachers.
Yeah.
There are some politicians who are planning to just put anyone that wants to come and teach without a four-year degree, without a master's degree. Just show up if you want to teach only because you have a background of probably serving in the military or something.
Well, that's where we've gotten to. We haven't valued our schools enough to whereby people are, ask most teachers. I don't think most of them are making strong recommendations to our youth that they should become teachers. And if you look at the climate of how public education has been, we haven't really valued our teachers in a long time. We don't give them autonomy. We rely everything based on tests. Not only do we grade our schools on tests, but we grade our teachers and our students. So everyone feels valued and judged. No one's willing to feel like they need to take a risk. The art of pedagogy and being able to be a good teacher takes years of practice. And it's something that should be something where if you're going to enter the profession, you're going to do so for the long haul. But unfortunately, our system is set up now where if you're a young teacher, whether you're qualified or not, if your kids don't perform well on a test by year one or two, you're getting your hand slapped with an evaluation that's not positive, and it doesn't lead to that teacher wanting to continue down that path.
Right. There's no incentive.
There's no incentive.
I mean, we could talk about, our social studies. We can talk about language arts in our schools. We can talk about the educator salaries. But none of this is as important as how to get more students enrolled in public schools. And I feel like that is one of the issues that people on the school board and other politicians are not addressing, how to get our children from their homes to their community schools safely.
They're not addressing it, Sita, because it's not politically in their favor to
talk
about it.
Like all zip codes should be treated the same.
The bottom line is that student enrollment and the competition within our schools is the biggest problem that's facing our schools. We're in a crisis situation and nobody's willing to look at it. Like what I mentioned earlier, everyone today is counting students. And, are we enrolling enough students in our schools, and are they producing, and that relates to budget, right? And so if you've seen either a flat line or even declining student enrollment over the last several years, what we're seeing is less money coming in from the state. And then you take the vouchers and the school choice and all these other programs, these parents are starting to make other decisions, and public schools are in big, big trouble. But if you're a politician or the people in the schools, their job is to try and paint the rosiest picture possible. So they're not going to sit here and tell you the way I'm saying that our school system's in trouble.
Yeah, it's like going to school and the school system is a business now. See who's got the contracts, right? Follow the money. But what role can the community play in supporting education of our children? Well, a lot of people don't even know how the schools are paid for.
I think they need to get more involved. That's part of my platform. I would love to see us engage more community leaders. We're in a unique area. It's a space coast. We got SpaceX and NASA, and then we have, military defense contractors, Harris and Northrop Grumman. We're also an area that's thriving. We have local businesses that are doing really well. Why are we not asking these people what they need.
Yeah. And, you know, I think parents have a role to play. Once you give birth to a child, you should want a good environment for that child. You should want a functioning public school, a community school. You should want good sidewalks. You should want opportunities for your child. So it's not just to drop the kid to school and not show up for the PTO meeting. Sometimes the teachers have teachers meet the parent day. And I had a couple of friends who are teachers would say to me, only four parents shows up, even though the teacher prepared the entire school.
You're looking at one of them.
Yeah. A lot of people don't show up, and yet still they blame the school system when their children are not doing well. So I think it goes both ways, right? Everything starts at home.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't want to put – you're right. I mean, the schools have taken on a lot more responsibilities than ever before where, you know, when I was teaching, I was not just a teacher. I was a dad. I was a mentor. I was basically every role you could think of, a coach. You know, you're right. It is, you know, it does start at the home, but not, you know, our home has changed. You know, I mean, you know, many years ago, there were two parent households. A lot of the times, one parent worked, one person stayed at home. Now we have households where if the kid is lucky to have two parents still, they're both working.
Right. Two jobs.
You know, two
right.
jobs.
And you have a lot of politicians who wants to cut the funding for daycare. That's another show for another topic. Well, we do have a second guest who would be calling in, so we'll give Keith one last question.
I just want to mention one thing too, that you know what people don't realize, especially around here, and we should be realizing it probably more than any other place in the nation, that our schools are not even thinking about the jobs that are going to be in 10 years, because we don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. Who knew that this whole AI thing was going to come out, right? And that's like a whole nother. Again, a whole nother scope and a whole nother thing. So I don't know that we're even preparing our teachers for the STEM, if you will, you know, the science, math, all of that information that our children that we have now are going to need in 5 or 10
That's
years.
Right. So Keith, you know, before you go, give us your website, because I want people to donate if they can to your campaign as well as volunteer. If you could give us your campaign website, we would appreciate it.
You can learn more about my platform at fixbps.com. That's fixbps.com.
And we'll make sure that all of that is on our websites as well.
So. Yep.
Well, I tell you, you know, a lot of people run for office, but not everyone, their heart is in it. And Keith Schachter, who is running for District 4 for the school board, his heart's in it. So before you go, I'll give you 30 seconds to give our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends your 30-second elevator speech.
Well, I'm going to take...
Why they should vote for you.
I'm going to take my 30 seconds to answer the question she just brought up, because
but
I think
AI,
it's really... Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, great point. We are not pivoting to what our world is in. Right now, we don't do it. We are operating in the past. AI is a great example of that. 10 years ago, I was telling everyone you need to major in computer science. Now, computer science jobs are being eaten up alive by AI. So we need to change what we're teaching our students. We need to stop teaching traditional subjects and start seeking feedback from the people that are on the front lines in our backyard that know what they're doing, so that we can start to change our curriculum to meet the needs of our ever-changing world. And that's why you should vote for me, Keith Schachter, mm-hmm. for District 4 School Board. Because
you segued pretty good into that.
Fantastic. Yeah. So we are going to take a quick, brief intermission and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after
one
these messages with Viewpoint
him.
With Sita and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473, Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste
located
of Louisiana?
In Titusville, Florida,
Lizette's
Dixie Crossroads,
John
Coff Financial Group, great is a certified public accounting and a registered.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web, all over God's magnificent planet. Our first segment just concluded with Mr. Keith Schachter, and don't forget to vote by August 20th in the primary. We're going to start our second segment promptly with my good friend, Dr. Sheila Patel. And she was born in Kenya, went to Zambia, where she completed her high school, next to the United Kingdom to pursue higher education. After completing her medical school in St. Andrews, Scotland, and Manchester, England, she came to live in the United States at the age of 26. And she specialized in child psychiatry in Augusta, Georgia. Had a private practice in Georgia as well, Valdosta, Georgia. She was a licensed practicing psychiatrist for over 25 years. And we're going to chat a little bit this morning about parenting, the loss of women's rights, why it's so important to have a good role model in our lives, and whatever we can cram in the next 20 minutes. She is coming back in October to sit in studio with us. So, Doctor, take it away. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, Sita, thank you very much for inviting me on your radio show, first of all. I am so honored to be able to speak to your audience about the problems that this country is facing right now. As a psychiatrist, I used to treat a lot of patients one-on-one. And after all the uptick in mental health issues over the last 4 years, especially since the pandemic, I have been really upset about what is happening, not only with the youth, but the adults and the number of suicides, 50,000 suicides just in 2022. So all of this has really propelled me into trying to put out my word through writing, through talking, and I would love to tell your audience what kind of things to look out for, what kind of things parents can do, what kind of social media impact there has been on the mental health, and why we all need to pay attention to a lot of things that are going on around us and within the family unit.
Right. And, we all strive as we get older we get bolder, we get wiser, and we want to leave a good footprint behind, not just for our own grandchildren, but for the world, for the people that's going to come after us. And you strike me as one of those, because when I read your bio, I'm like, she's my kind of lady. Yes. So anyways, you also wrote a lot of books. So tell our listeners a little bit, when did you find time to write, and what made you write the books?
Well, during the pandemic, like I said, it was a little bit before that. I was really upset about a lot of women coming out with the Me Too movement. And it's not that I did not acknowledge their hurt and the trauma that some of these women went through. But then there was also this point where everybody was jumping on the bandwagon with Me Too. And so I really felt like I was the only child female psychiatrist and the only child psychiatrist for about 15 years in the community of South Georgia. So I saw a fair number of women, and of course they were wanting to see a female psychiatrist, and going through a lot of their issues, self-responsibility is a big factor for me. And if you're going to get healthier, you have to take self-responsibility. So during the pandemic, when everything was shut down, I couldn't do what I love to do, which is travel. I decided to sit down, and I am surrounded by brainiacs in this Cape Canaveral with the astronauts and the engineers and the NASA. And so they all felt like I had 25 years of experience working with thousands of patients. And with my credentials, that maybe what I had to say might resonate with some people. And so I started with the Me Too movement, and then the school shootings happened, and that really bothered me. And then a lot of other social factors, you know, with the Black Lives Matter, the police problems, the general, everybody going on about anxiety, depression, talking about the impact of social media, how people were not communicating, the issue of loneliness. And so I decided to start writing. And once you start writing, it's like, you know, these thoughts just keep flowing. And my book got so big that I had to divide it up into two books. And so I have U.S. Unhinged Book 1 and U.S. and Us Unhinged Book 2. And the first book is all about relationships. I decided to even include what makes a good male and female relationship, why it is so important for us to have our role identity as males and females, whether there is hope for women. We were beginning to start losing the loss of freedom of choice for women during that time. And then the pandemic happened. And I knew that we were going to have a lot of mental health issues during the pandemic. And so I started talking about what to look out for, what to do in a relationship, how couples can stick together, how the families can get together, and what you can do to avoid getting so lonely and upset and angry and frustrated all the time.
Right. And
so
you know,
kind of started me.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's almost like you became everybody's auntie and big sister and grandma.
Yes.
And you said,
yes,
listen, at this point in life, we have a very anxious nation, and we've,
yes,
got parents who are, you know, we were on lockdown for so long that we had so many children with mental health issues and loneliness. I remember in the nursing facilities, even when our patients died, we had to say the Lord's Prayer on a tablet, and so the patient could go. And so we've gone through a lot the last 4 years. And I want to ask you, what can we do now to bring back that confidence in our children? Because we're watching where children are being hit from east, west, north, and south with social media, anxiety, shooting in the schools. Some schools don't have enough teachers. We just heard from one of our school board candidates who's concerned about the lack of enrollment in public schools and community schools, which means that school may close and then parents have to find transportation to send their kid elsewhere. We are living in a time when children, their confidence has been eroded. How do we help America's children and adults to get that boost back?
You know, I always go back to my roots. My parents were very hardworking. They were excellent role models. I watched them grow up and struggle to make ends meet. And I learned to have really good work ethics, plus I learned from them what is the right thing to do and how to reach out. My father had this big goal of not only helping his own family rise up and come out of poverty and make something of themselves, but he also gave a lending hand to a lot of people. I think that's what the Americans have forgotten. During the pandemic, everybody was so closed down. The parents have just totally focused on the security of the kids to their detriment, because what's happening now is we talk about the helicopter parents, which is parents just hovering over kids and trying to do everything for them. They make excuses for them for talking bad or talking back, which would have never been tolerated during our growing up years. Also, they tend to make excuses of them not doing their chores or not making their bed or not being disciplined.
They're too easy on them.
Yes, they are way too easy on them. And as a child psychiatrist, I can tell you that that causes a lot of problems for the kids. And why is that? Because they are not given the opportunity to overcome their own obstacles. What also happens is that these kids are kept so busy with their sports and extracurricular activities that they have forgotten how to date, how to have heartache, how to have breakups,
romance,
how to deal with emotional.
I think these,
yes, romance.
These date, you know what's causing that too, Dr. Patel, is the apps. These apps are focused only on people hooking up, so to speak. You know, there is no, there's a handsome boy in my class and he's got beautiful eyes and I fell in love and I want to go on a movie and I want to walk on the beach and hold hands. It's almost, and not just for the teenagers and the young adults, it's for grown adults too. People have forgotten how to be in love and appreciate the moment.
You know, one of the things that I have written in my books about love and relationships is that right now with the young people, it is talking about who entertains you for the evening or for a short period of time in your life. It's not falling in love anymore. And that is why so many couples are not getting married, or they get married and they get divorced so quickly, because they don't understand the meaning of love. They don't understand the meaning of what it takes to make a couple work, how to have tolerance, how to build a relationship. And the other thing, it's like you said, you know, we used to have one night stands. Now they have half night stands, which is really an interesting concept, because what happens is that the young people hook up, they have sex, and then, you know, either the male or the female gets up, gets dressed, and goes home. Because what do they want to do? In the morning, they want to have their own bed. They want to have their own clothes. They want to check their emails. They want to check their text messages and then go off to work. And, you know, I'm all for career women, because I was one of those. I had a very successful career. I worked. But I also remembered my identity as a woman. I still take a lot of pleasure in being able to sew. You know, if there's a tear in a cloth, to sew it up. I take pleasure in cooking a really good meal every evening. I take pleasure in making sure that the refrigerator is stocked up with groceries. And at the same time, have time to do things like this, which I'm passionate about, which is putting out positive messages. And you mentioned a role model. That's what I was coming back to, was having very good role models in your life. And right now, what's happening with the politics right now is it's so divided. You know, we have, I'm not going to say any names, but do you really respect somebody who calls another person a name, is a bully, is putting the other person down, talking about, you know, taking revenge and stuff like that? So that's where the parents
Or somebody who don't know somebody is Indian. I mean, you could look at me and you and know we're Indian, you know? You don't have to it's right there, right in your face. But, you know, one of the things you talk about in your books is that Americans and people world over, human beings in general, have to take personal responsibility and recognize the problems that are facing us and facing the next generation, and try to heal ourselves, because the destiny for the future is in our hands. And if we don't learn how to collectively become a more kindful, mindful, caring, compassionate, loving nation and world, we cannot leave the footprint behind for the next generation if we leave it in such disarray.
Sita, we will implode. That's what's going to happen. We will implode from the inside. You know, so many people in the past have mentioned that America was a great country. We have risen. And in 250 years, we have made so many advances. I came to this country 40 years ago. And let me tell you, I am so appreciative of all the opportunities I've had, of all the Americans that have reached out to me. They have never made me feel like I'm an Indian woman. And it is so shameful right now that instead of dealing with what is important for all Americans, what is important for moving our country forward, how to, you know, take care of each other. Because in my book, I have a whole chapter on looking at the American values and beliefs. What was this country based on? And when I researched for that chapter, I was so amazed the amount of volunteerism this country does, how generous we are, you know, to a fault, because anybody can put stuff on Facebook and say, oh, go me fund. And, you know, people are pouring out of their pockets, whether they can afford it or not, to help with that person. So we are a very generous society. But on the other hand, the politicians have caused such a divide. And they have focused so much on looking at you, especially right now in this election, whether you're black or brown or green or yellow or whatever. It's not the color. America was based on immigrants. That's what people tend to forget, that it's the immigrants that have really built up this country. And that's why Elon Musk really makes me upset, because he's an immigrant. He has been unbelievably successful. He came from South Africa, which was really apartheid, and the Dutch really downtrodden on all those South Africans till Mandela took effect. And here he's gonna, you know, go out and support somebody who is so toxic to half the Americans. That doesn't make sense. And
a
lot of anxiety.
Yeah, I just had this conversation with someone a few weeks ago who were talking about the border. And I said, listen, you got to figure out the root causes of why people flee. People don't flee anything that's good. They don't flee a good marriage. They don't flee a good job. They don't flee a good country. I mean, they don't even sit on an aircraft if there's a rumble and a tumble on that and a noise. They come off of it. So the thing is, people flee when there's a problem. And I think it behooves all of us to figure out what foreign policy, what wars, what depletion of resources causes other people to leave the land where their navel string is buried, so to speak, and leave. And I like what you said about America. America gives us the education and opportunity. And for people like you and I, who are legal immigrants and work and pay tons of taxes, it gives us... we have a balance where we could go to work 40 hours a week and still come home on the weekend and have that foundation for a family, where we could cook the curry chicken and rice and roti and invite friends and have conversations in our homes about colleges and educations and financial literacy. And most important, with the 1 minute left, I want you to talk to us quickly about the anxiety that people are facing with the loss of freedom and the loss of freedom of choice in this country. That is going to affect a lot of people in generations to come.
Bottom line is, people have forgotten how to communicate. They've forgotten how to communicate to each other. The parents are on their cell phones. The children are on their cell phones. Nobody's talking to each other in restaurants. Nobody is having sit-down talks. Even the college students are having a lot of anxiety because they don't know how to communicate. They have come out of a family situation where people are not talking. If people don't start talking to each other and listening to each other, we are a lost society.
Yes. Well, Doctor, I am going to have you still back on in October, because you just filled
us. Yes, thanks for bailing us out.
You did, and Ellen has got your book up, and I'm like you. I can't believe I found somebody in speaking with you for a few minutes a couple days ago. We have everything in common, 99.9%, and for me, this election in November is all about
a
woman's right to choose. It's your body. It's your spirit. It's your mind, and no one has a right to live in your body and tell you what to do, except yourself, your God.
Yes, absolutely.
what an awesome segment. Again, I can't wait to talk to you more in depth in October. But for right now, we have to sign off on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in each and every Monday from 1 to 2 Eastern Standard Time here on 1510 WWBC. Make sure to tune in next week on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll talk to you next week.